following podcast may contain spoilers.
Two critics will enter, knowing that they will suffer. Being confined within a contest that knows no mercy. Trapped in a trial more extreme than ever. They will be detained until only one movie is left. The time has come. Seal their fate. It will be a December to dismember.
Standing, the very last movie standing for 2021, which is pretty amazing. You know, if you're new here, if you followed over two great film critics to this particular podcast and you're wondering what we're all about, we go season by season, episode by episode. We have a slate of films that we watch, typically about five films per episode. And then myself and a legitimate film critic, usually, or even a filmmaker, will debate what we believe the best film of that particular week is. At the end of the season, we have my list, which is called the short list, and we have the guest list, which is ironically called the guest list. This time around, we watched Nightmare on Elm Street, classic Disney films, oddball movies of the 90s, Tom Hanks films of the 80s, and Alfred Hitchcock. On my short list, I picked the original Nightmare on Elm Street, Fantasia, I Come in Peace, Big, and Psycho. On the guest list, Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast chose A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. Kevin R. Brackett from Real Spoilers chose Pinocchio. David Rosen from, and that's not going to be the last of the ethnic stereotypes you hear on this episode, folks. David Rosen from PC Together Pod picked The Frighteners, and the Lady Wan from Screen Run picked Big, and Erica from the internet and all over the place picked Vertigo. So this is going to be an interesting little battle. Let me do the introductions to our two champions here today. They're both champions coming in. You're going to decide who the champion is at the end of this episode when we put our poll up and you vote who won Last Movie Standing, because only one film can make it into our no copyright infringement intended vault. She is the Bono of bad movies, the wild Irish Rose of Rotten Tomatoes. Her reputation is fearless. Her beautiful eyes are folklore, and as is her red hair. And what may be her final podcast appearance evermore, she is Claire. And I better let her speak now. Claire, what do you want to say in your final podcast appearance?
You started out weak because my mum's biggest celebrity crush for my entire life has been Bono. Yeah. So you preferring me to Bono was very upsetting on many levels. she had pictures of him inside her wardrobe and she was a 50-year-old woman. But you saved it with all the Taylor references. So I'm back on board. I'm here. I'm ready.
All right. Now, across from you, Claire, is, I don't know, my favorite film critic living today.
Oh my God, how do I live up to that?
She's not just my personal Roger Ebert. She's a feminist vegan film critic, and at least two of those are superpowers.
Woo-hoo!
She's here to spoil the peace and leave you on the edge of your seat. She is the Boston Badler, the Mahler of Massachusetts, the pulverizer of prejudices, smashing patriarchies, and wish I could cut some pots off with some scissors. Hearts all around the world, really. The Scream Queen! Megan!
Thank you. That might be the most fantastic intro I've ever received in my entire life. Nothing will top that moment. Thank you.
It's the only reason I come on this show is for the intros. I'm like, I need that serotonin pickup. Like, just...
I need that boost in my life.
Yeah, definitely.
The only reason I come on your show is for the intros. Not for the witty repartee, for the analytical...
No, for the really out-of-this-world compliments and serotonin boosts.
I see.
Yeah, I'm going to be riding that wave for like a week. It's going to be epic.
Wow. Okay. Well, I thought I had something to add to society. Apparently, I'm wrong. All right. No, that's fine. You take my energy. You feel better about yourself. You knock me down a few pegs. I get how this works.
We're emotional vampires, apparently.
Yeah, you're emotional vampires.
100%.
You leached off my positivity and left me feeling weak. I feel like I'm in life force. Which is, you guys are space vampires, and I'm just a space captain who doesn't know who he is anymore.
Oh, no.
you're not a life force fan? You're a genre defender. But you don't like life force?
No. Whatever. It's fine.
All right. Well, we are here for Last Movie Standing. We are here to decide what is the next film that is going to go into the vault to join the likes of 1978's Halloween, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Aladdin, Jurassic Park, Parasite, Toy Story, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Men in Black, Saving Private Ryan. I'm still salty about that. It should have been Rocky.
It should have.
Yes, I know it should have. You're exactly right. Thank you, Claire. And probably the best pick our binge lords have ever made, and maybe the only good choice film Twitter's ever made in their life, putting Ghostbusters into the vault, our most recent entry. So we're going to be trying to figure out what is the film that's going to be joining these stone cold classics. I'm excited to see what you folks have picked. But before we get there, we have to do a little something called First Cut. All right, let's start with you, Claire.
Oh, no.
What are your bottom three? These are the movies you're just getting rid of right away. You're like, this is junk. This is shit. This is not worthy of preservation. Hit the bricks, pal. What are those three?
First off, The Frighteners, Peter Jackson's film. I will be nice to it. I am a renowned Peter Jackson hater. I don't like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, so I didn't like them anyway. Yeah. But then The Lovely Bones was my favourite book as a teenager, and it was the book that when I went to film school, I wanted to turn into a film. And then in my final year of film school, Peter Jackson's version came out, and it is the worst fucking piece of shit I've ever seen. So, I was pleasantly surprised by The Frighteners. It was nowhere near as bad as I thought it would be. But it isn't worthy of preservation. I'm sorry. It's messy. It's clunky. Does it want to be Ghostbusters? Does it want to be Casper? Does it want to be something actually scary? Who knows? Not them.
You may be a villain on the internet, but you're a hero in my heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
What's your next one? What are you getting rid of immediately?
Going straight back into villain mode. I'm getting rid of Vertigo.
Holy shit!
Wow! That's
chaotic
a shocker.
Good, chaotic neutral, chaotic evil. We're about to find out. Vertigo straight up the top. What the fuck?
I watched it for the first time last year and it just didn't work for me. I was really bored until the twist, and then I was like, oh my god, yes, but that came way too late for me. I totally get why it does work for other people, but for me, I'm like, it's a fine film, and I'm sure if you've not seen the hundreds of riffs on it now that exist, it would be great, but having seen all of those riffs and then watching Vertigo, it just doesn't hold up on a first-time watch at my age in this time.
You have shook the world.
There was a fellow film Twitterer who, like, a few weeks ago just, like, tweeted, like, Vertigo's a piece of shit. I was like, oh! I was like, I just didn't like it personally, but, like, you go off.
Okay. All right. Well, I know a certain other film critic in the Maryland area, Baltimore area, is going to, she's going to be coming for you. I'm just going to warn you.
I'm sorry. I do get why people love it, but it's just not a film I can defend. Yeah. So
I respect that.
Yeah, a better person could. I can't.
All right. Well, you've just broken hearts all around the world for elderly people. What's your final film you're getting rid of? Right, straight off the rip.
Big.
No!
I thought this would be my pick. I thought it would. I watched it for the first time maybe last weekend. Oh boy, I did not gel with that film in the slightest. I was like, no, come on, give it more time. It'll work. It'll build. And it just kept, in my mind, kept getting worse. It is, how did I describe it? Like, a basic underskilled white man fails upwards.
Yes!
He's a child.
Yeah, so corporate America would rather give an 8-year-old child a job than give a woman, a skilled woman who had clearly been doing the right thing for years.
Thank you. Thank you, Claire. Thank you.
I'm canceling this episode. This is never going to make air. All right, well, Claire is defending the guest list, and she immediately got rid of a Lady Wan pick who just loved Big and was effusive about it, and who came in with the same reservations you had, was like, it's magic, it worked on me. And you're like, nah, fuck that, the movie stinks. And an Erica pick for one of the greatest movies ever made.
Yeah, but Erica picked Saving Private Ryan over Rocky, so we can no longer trust Erica's opinion.
Whoa. Guns blazing.
Yeah, no,
it's fine. Erica, I love you. Our Taylor Swift bond keeps us together forever.
I mean, that's a good bond.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm hoping this next person's picks are less problematic because she's my own personal superhero. She's my own personal Roger Ebert. Do me right! By my heart.
I will do my best.
All right. Bottom three, what's immediately not worthy for preservation? What's shit on this list?
Oh,
my list.
What's shit?
List? Yeah.
I come in peace.
Fucking bullshit!
So, I just need to interject. That film is apparently so shit that it was released in the UK with a completely different name and is unfindable. It is untraceable.
Yeah,
I tried so hard.
It's Dark Angel here, too. I couldn't find it under I Come in Peace. I had to find it under Dark Angel. Yeah.
Dark Angel.
So that's correct. Yeah.
But no one wants me to see that film, and now I'm relieved I don't have to.
And no, nor should you. I know, Jason, I know you like it, but it is just no. It is bad acting. It is bad dialogue, bad pacing. And I'm a diehard sci-fi lover, and I can cut a lot of slack for a lot of bad shit, but no. Just no.
There's a CD that is programmed to find electromagnetic radiation off of human bodies, and it cuts people's head off.
Yes, it does.
That is an amazing film.
Yes, yes, a CD. It's like a projectile CD that like slices people's throats.
Oh, I kind of do want to watch this.
I will tell you, that part is cool, and then that's it.
Okay, YouTube the clip.
Correct.
Now, wait, Claire. The person shooting, Megan is burying the lead.
Oh, am I?
The person who is shooting the projectile CD is a space alien drug lord who comes to Earth, pumps human beings full of pure heroin, then sticks a tube in their brain and draws out their endorphins, because human endorphins on heroin is the premier drug of his planet.
I mean, isn't that Elon Musk in like 10 years?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, here's the thing. On paper, sure, that sounds interesting. But in execution, no.
But Megan, explosions. Yes.
I do love an explosion.
So many explosions in that movie on an $8 million budget.
I know. But, you know, if you want to go for a sci-fi drug-fueled film, go with Dread. It's so much better.
All right. Well, you've already disappointed me as a fellow film critic.
Well, maybe I can redeem myself. Maybe not. We'll find out.
We'll find out. You're now in Gene Siskel territory with your Dark Angel takes.
That's an insult.
I kid. Of course I still love you. What's your next shit movie?
Okay, well, this isn't shit.
Okay,
just to be clear, because there were a lot of great movies on this list. The only one I didn't like was I Come in Peace. So it's kind of like what's the best of the best and what can I jettison?
Yeah.
And I would say Fantasia. Now, Fantasia, so I love Disney films. Love. I'm actually wearing a Disney shirt right now. Love Disney movies. If this was a different Disney film on my list, I might have chosen it because there are some incredible Disney films out there that are groundbreaking and heartbreaking and wonderful. Fantasia is really interesting because I like it conceptually. It's really great in that it's experimental, it's abstract, parts of it are avant-garde. That all sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
But like so many anthology films, it's wildly uneven. And that's the problem with it, is that I love Night on Bald Mountain. I love seeing the fairies waking up the other fairies and the flowers. But the other shorts I don't care about. They're fine, they're whatever. Or they succumb to wildly problematic racism or sexism. So yeah.
In a Disney movie?
I know, shocking, right? Shocking. So the thing of it is that if you want to see really, really truly weird, abstract Disney shorts, I would go with Destino, which is amazing, and which was talked about including in Fantasia, but didn't happen. So I had to say goodbye to Fantasia.
Fair enough. What is the last movie you are getting rid of?
Well, this might make some people happy and some people mad. I also said goodbye to Big.
But also a little bit sad for me because I was really hoping I could rebuttal the shit out of that one.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm so mad at that.
So, Claire, I actually was hoping you would choose it so I could rebuttal the shit out of it. So, it kind of broke my heart that I can't. But I will say,
sorry.
No. Totally fine.
Jason has just left the
screen. I know. Jason has vacated the building.
Turn it off!
So listen, I want to first say, I actually do love Big. I love Tom Hanks dearly. There is not a Tom Hanks performance that I dislike. I think Tom Hanks is the heart and soul of that film.
Yeah.
He's charming. He is wonderful. He's charismatic. He is lovely. He truly captures naivete and wonder perfectly of a boy trapped in a man's body. And I like Penny Marshall's films. However, this is not Penny Marshall's best film. For me, that would be A League of Their Own.
Yeah.
And there is so much icky, creepy problems with the premise of a boy having a sexual relationship with an adult woman.
Okay, so if he didn't fuck a 40-year-old woman.
Wait. No, I'm not done. I'm just saying that. Even when I saw this in the theaters as a kid, that never worked for me. It has never worked for me on rewatch. Never. And I agree with Claire that it is all about white male mediocrity and how men just stumble into success and don't even have to be really great or experienced or anything. So that is a problem too. Do I still love this film? Yes. Is it charming as fuck? Yes, absolutely. Do I adore Tom Hanks? Always and forever. But if I have to pick the best of these movies, Big's gotta go. Sorry.
I think calling an 8-year-old boy mediocre is the hot take.
I'm sticking with it.
But just like imagine being a woman in that job and being like, sorry, they would rather hire an 8-year-old boy than me who has 10 years of experience.
Well, wait a minute. Let's back up a minute. Even if you don't know he's an 8-year-old boy, he's still just a newbie who just wandered off the street and has no experience, as opposed to Elizabeth Perkins, who has been busting her ass.
He also, like, if they don't know he's an 8-year-old boy, they clearly can recognize that he has some sort of developmental or mental health issues, and they are just taking advantage of him.
Yes. Yes.
You guys don't like magic or happiness. That's what I...
Hey, no. I watched Splash for the first time this year. Bloody loved it. That is a magical Tom Hanks film that we should all celebrate.
I agree. If Splash had been on this list, it might have been a very different outcome.
Yeah, it would. 100%.
Although that is also problematic too, but that's a whole other thing.
Your guys' line, the line you draw is 8-year-old boys and 40-year-old women out.
I mean, yeah.
That's not a bad line to draw.
Grown men and fish. No problem.
She's a mermaid. She's half human. It's fine.
Not the bottom half. Not the bottom half.
The Little Mermaid is my favorite film of all time. So, like, you can't come at me with that one. I'm a redhead who was born in 1989. Like, mermaids are it.
Little Mermaid is a beautiful queer and trans allegory. So I always will stand for Little Mermaid, even
though
it's problematic.
That's a movie where the only way she finds love is she has to sacrifice her voice? Come on, feminists.
But like no, if you watch it, she actually saves the day. Eric falls into the water. She saves Eric. She gets a Triton. She stabs Ursula. Ariel was the first modern Disney hero who saved herself. Eric was just there cheering her on.
I think we can all agree that Big is great. So
I started by saying that. I am not shitting on Big. I'm just saying why I had to draw a line.
All right, well, it's already coming fast and furious, and I've now been ganged up on my own show. I'm not even competing. I'm done. I'm just literally moderating.
I got you. Go.
Oh, okay. It's all just an act.
Stop! He's already dead.
So I hope that our two competitors can turn their rage against me against each other.
Oh, no rage. We love you.
Let's do a little timeout. Let's go over to Paul, another mediocre white guy, to have him mansplain to us the rules of Last Movie Standing.
The rules of Last Movie Standing. Competitors have been randomly assigned either the guest list or Jason's shortlist before the episode. The winner of the opening Dunn/Deloise coin flip will choose between two advantages, first pick or first word/last word. First pick means they get first choice of movie from their list, giving them the advantage of choosing the film they think is most likely to win. First word/last word gives the advantage of hearing their competitor's final argument and gets the last word to the audience. Last Movie Standing is a 4-round snake debate. Round 1, opening arguments of 90 seconds. The person with the first word is given 90 seconds to make their uninterrupted case for their film. Then their opponent makes their case for their film. In round 2, rebuttals take place. Also, over 90 seconds. The person with the first pick is given 90 seconds to critique their opponent's argument. Then their opponent does the same. Round 3, cross-examinations. Also 90 seconds. The person with first word will be given 90 seconds to directly question their opponent. The opponent can respond during this time. Then their opponent has 90 seconds to do the same. Round 4, closing arguments. This time, just 60 seconds long. The person with the first pick will be given 60 uninterrupted seconds to make their appeal directly to the audience for their vote on the basis of their movie's worthiness and the opposing movie's lack thereof. The person with last word will conclude with the same.
Claire, heads or tails?
Tails, please.
It is tails!
Oh. Oh no, I'm not good at making decisions.
All right. We just did the coin flip. Claire, you are defending the guest list, and you just won the coin flip. It was tails, which means you get to choose between the first pick or first word, last word. Do you want to go first and get your last word in, or do you want your premium choice of film?
Neither. I am going to wimp out and take my first pick because I don't want to start first.
All right, so you are down to Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, and Pinocchio. Are you going to defend a sex offender or a boy made of pine who goes to Pleasure Island? What's the deal?
I'm going sex offender. May I remind you, the last time I was on this pod, I defended Austin Powers, yeah, The Spy Who Shagged Me, right, as the best film, so that's clearly right. I have a type.
Yeah. Yeah, Austin Powers, no problem. Freddy Krueger, child murderer, no problem. Tom Hanks is a lovable boy who just likes toys. Get the fuck out of here.
Correct.
Hey, fuck the patriarchy, man. Fuck the patriarchy.
Unless his name's Fred Krueger.
But this is about killing him, man. This is about killing the man.
I have so much to say.
I support killing men, so I'm here for this one.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you. Do we even need to debate? Should we just, like, team up?
So I feel like I know what Megan's pick might be.
You might.
Oh, shit. Okay, all right. Well, that means, Megan, you have first word and last word. You are down to A Nightmare on Elm Street and Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a bold pick. You are a genre fan. You're a classic movie fan.
Yep.
You're a bit of a film snob, but you also like to get around in a gutter in a trash. As long as it's not Dolph Lundgren, apparently. I found your limit.
Dolph Lundgren.
I found your limit.
Yeah, you can go back to chemical engineering.
What is your pick? And tell us what your movie is.
My movie is A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Holy
yes! Oh my god, I was so paranoid you were going to pick Psycho. I was like, how do I rip apart Psycho? You can't.
Holy
you can, because I actually did it to myself.
I tried.
I played devil's advocate with myself, and you actually can, because I did it in preparation for Vertigo, too. So it's hard to do, but you can.
Time out. To every other podcaster who's been, and there's been a few, it's been like, I want to do Last Movie Standing. I want to do Last Movie. Did you hear what Megan Kearns just said? She prepared. she created counter arguments to her own picks to decide,
yes.
Which is what you got to do, because you got to be able to pivot and you got to be able to anticipate what somebody else might say to deconstruct their arguments. So as much as these women apparently hate me, they're great at this. At least my taste in movies. God damn.
We do our wait, you picked A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I did.
So there we go.
I also picked I Come in Peace, and you shit all over. Okay, all right. So if you are ready, I'm going to get my handy dandy timer, which is not on my phone. So Megan, you will be given 90 seconds to make your uninterrupted case for A Nightmare on Elm Street, okay? And then, right after, Claire, you will get 90 seconds, uninterrupted. You're not no rebuttal. We're not there yet. That's the next round. Just make a case for your films. Does it make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So, Megan, tell me when you're ready.
Oh, boy. Let me take a sip. I had to go with Nightmare on Elm Street because it is one of my absolute favorite horror films from my childhood. It is one of the horror films that got me into the horror genre. It is an exceptionally smart, innovative horror film. I love home invasion films because you are being attacked at a place you are supposed to be comfortable, you're supposed to be safe. And what is more terrifying than thinking you're safe when you're sleeping and then your dreams are invaded by a homicidal child murdering killer? So I love that. I love the surreal, gory, brutal elements of these dreams. I love Nancy's feet sinking into the stairs, which was used with pancake batter. I love the spinning room, which is used to kill Johnny Depp with the geyser of blood, and use Tina's body, which is dragged around by an invisible assailant. I love those technical details. The cinematography is great. The score is great. And I love Nancy as the final girl. This is coming at the end of the golden age of slashers from 1978 to 1984, and Wes Craven had seen all of these horror films before, and he is a master at innovating films and innovating the genre and seeing what works and infusing his own fears and his own takes on things with a very smart, funny, satirical bent. And he was inspired by a true story that was in the LA Times about a family that had lead the Cambodian genocide, and their son was dying because out of a dream, and he put that into the film, and it's amazing. And Nancy's amazing final girl.
All right, right down the wire, throwing open arguments. Claire, are you ready?
Yes.
All right, here we go, and go.
Can't agree more with what Megan has just said, but do you know what's better than a great film? A film that takes the greatness of the film and builds upon it. Nightmare on Elm Street is a brilliant foundation. Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors is the house. And you want to live in the house. You don't want to live in the foundations. It has a brilliant ensemble. Some of the best horrors are the ones that have built up ensemble cast. We get a development of Freddy's backstory, but not too much that we sympathise with him, but we get to know more about the lore of Freddy and why he is the way he is. All of the best scenes of the first one are present, but they fill in some of those plot holes, they further cement the key rules, and they bring back Nancy. Not just bringing back Nancy as a final girl, but as a wiser, older mentor. So we get to look at PTSD, which, you know, Halloween 2018 totally stole from this film. And we get to see some of the best CGI in at least the first three films. We get a brilliant look at mental health in teenagers, which is so overlooked in most genres. Horror, again, looking at things that other people are too afraid to. And as you said, what's scarier than being attacked in your own bed? Well, hospital is meant to be one of the safest places in the world. It's where you go to heal. So being attacked in a bed in a hospital, they're just layering on all those extra fears. And you get a cool nerd guy that screams, "I am the wizard master," which, you know, just, you just gotta love it. You gotta enjoy it. You've gotta roll with it.
And down the wire. All right. Now we're moving on to round two, rebuttals. This is another 90-second round. Claire, you get to immediately go again because this is a snake debate format. So,
okie dokie,
you get to do a little rebuttal here to Megan's opening arguments. Are you ready?
Do I look at my paper? Do I look at the screen? Do I look at you guys? Too many things.
So many options.
I am ready.
All right, and go.
So yes, Nightmare on Elm Street is great. And yes, Nancy is a brilliant final girl. But let's be honest, as Jason said in the original Nightmare on Elm Street episode, she is not the best of actresses. She is still a little bit weak in this film, which is why Nightmare on Elm Street 3 just is that stronger, because we've seen her develop as a character and as an actress. Yes, you've got all of those surreal elements like the spinning rooms and all of the wonderful kills and CGI. But again, the ones in three are better. You have that marionette puppet. You have the TV screen. Like, yeah, watching Johnny Depp being eaten by a bed is absolutely amazing. But the kill of Nancy's mother confuses things. It messes things up. So even though it's surreal, it doesn't quite know where its line is between surreal and the real. Absolutely love that it infuses the fears. Again, I think it is smart, it is innovative, but I don't think it's fully cooked. I don't think it was fully all the way there. There was studio intervention that did mess up the ending, that did change things, and the ending is messy. And it's hard to argue against that. So even though it's smart, it's innovative, all the things you have said are right, I just don't think it's fully cooked.
All right, you've got 15 seconds left. You can forfeit your last 15.
I mean, it has Johnny Depp in it, and I don't know if we like him or not, so...
No! Yeah.
All right.
I don't want to get cancelled from either side of that fight. There's no one has time to be in the middle of
I'll
that fight.
I'll get cancelled. I'm not here for him at all. Okay. Anyway, she's a form. Cancel me. Although, cancel culture, that's a whole myth, but anyway, I digress.
Megan's on her shit today.
I am on it.
She has come to chew bubblegum and kick ass, and she's all out of bubblegum. Which, if you love They Live, you should also check out I Come in Peace before it gets eliminated from some mainstream.
Someone is salty about that.
Megan, are you ready for your rebuttal?
Yes, I hope I can read my own handwriting. As I took copious notes.
Tell me when you're ready.
I got it.
Okay, all right, and go.
Okay, so I agree with everything, Claire, that you're saying about Dream Warriors. Dream Warriors is excellent. It's one of the best sequels. I completely agree with that. However, when you talk about wanting to live in the house rather than the foundation, I actually think that Nightmare on Elm Street is also the house. I mean, it is lovingly referred to at New Line Cinema as, you know, the house that Freddy built. And so I completely agree with that. And I think all of the things that you're talking about that are so wonderful in the third one are there fully formed in the first one. I think I love that you mentioned PTSD, because you're absolutely right. Trauma is something that is so integral to the Nightmare on Elm Street films, and it's really, really showcased incredibly well in the first one. Nancy is dealing with a tremendous amount of trauma with not only her sleep deprivation and not only being chased and stalked, but with the death of her friends. And it seems like everyone else around her is kind of glossing it over, but she is not. And this also showcases brilliantly how teens are in a liminal space between childhood and adulthood, and how they have to rely on themselves, and how their adults around them are either absent or are dealing with addiction and cannot be there to help the children or save them in any way, shape, or form. And so Nancy has to rely on herself. And yes, Heather Langenkamp is not necessarily the best actress. That is true. I think it's a very uneven performance. However, I think she as an actress really, really captures the fear and the terror of Nancy exceptionally well. While she's not maybe great in some of the more serious scenes, in like with her mother, in those scenes, she is phenomenal.
Yep, you're out of time.
Phenomenal is a really big word to fit into 5 seconds.
Yeah, it is.
I agree.
Yeah. She was dropping all the big words. Liminal, space, phenomenal.
And I'm just like, turkey and cooking.
I may have heard an ontological in there too. I'm not sure.
No. I wish I could take credit for that, but no.
Megan, you get to go again. But this time Claire gets to respond to you. You've had each other's movies under the hot lights of examination. Now it's time to put your opponent under the hot lights of cross-examination.
Okay.
Ask questions for your opponent. The opponent gets to answer. This is another 90-second round. So, Claire, you can respond to what you are being asked. and permission to be a hostile witness. Go ahead. Turnabout's fair play. You'll be able to be hostile when you get in the seat, Megan. So, are we ready, Megan? Are you ready for your cross-examination of Claire and her arguments for Dream Warriors?
Yes.
Okay. 90 seconds is on the clock. Let's go now.
Okay, so Claire, you talked about how in the third film you liked that there's a greater development of the lore of Freddy and of the backstory of Freddy. What do you think that really adds to the story?
I think it gives a reason as why he keeps coming back, because I think that's something that was underdeveloped in the first sequel. It's suddenly like, oh, he's just going to possess this random boy. Whereas I liked in this one, it added to it that we see that he's particularly going after these people's children. Whether or not they did the right thing or wrong thing by killing him, debatable. I'm not sure what it really wants us to feel on that one. Any of the franchise, it makes it clear that they are going after the children of those people to hurt them again. And I love that it implies that the Catholic Church did a cover-up, because as we all know, Catholic Church be loving their cover-ups.
But wait a minute, don't you think that that's already clear in the first one, since Nancy's mother talks about the origins of Freddy and talks about how they all banded together, the parents,
yeah,
to stop him?
Yeah, but then it kind of neatly ties up, like, oh, Nancy didn't get killed, so he's never going to go after anyone again. Whereas this one's like, no, bitch, there's other kids. I'm coming for more.
But don't you think in the end of the first one, which granted, yes, had interventions from the studio and the producer wanted to change it, not what Wes Craven wanted, but don't you think that also implies that it's not neatly done, where he's not over, that he's going to come back?
But it is the studio intervention, but it just cheaps out on having an ending. It's just like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do, so, it's just another dream, blah, 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 and that's it.
Okay, we have to cut off there.
That was a great place to cut.
All right, so Claire, well, you get to turn the tables now. Megan, you have permission to be a hostile witness. You get to respond to Claire's questions. She's going to take your arguments and your film and cross-examine it. And God knows what Claire's about to say.
I'm schwitzing over here. this is intense.
It is intense. Yeah, it's hard.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Claire, are you ready?
Yes.
And go.
Okay, so you kind of said that whilst I said the third one really looks at trauma, you said, well, the first one looks at trauma too. Mm-hmm. But is it actually ever really explored? Is she being haunted by the deaths of her friends, or is she being haunted by Freddy? Because it's really unclear what she's actually scared of. Does she care that all her friends died, or does she care about the Dream Man?
I think she cares about all of it, and that's the thing. It's the intersection of multiple traumas and multiple oppressions. You don't need to necessarily tease it out and pick one over the other. I think it's both, and that she's just traumatized by everything and
then why does she go to school the next day when her friend has been brutally murdered? She clearly doesn't care.
Because she doesn't want to be home with her alcoholic mother. Because some people bury themselves in work or in school in order to push through. And Nancy is someone that, as we see, until the end of the film, she is someone who pushes ahead and pushes through, and she finds solutions. She does that right away, right out of the gate when she interacts with Freddy the very first time, and she does it at the end, which is why she's an amazing final girl, because she is setting booby traps, and she is setting plans and attacks.
Okay, but on that, is that not really confusing as an audience member? Because suddenly it switches from it's all in her dreams to suddenly it's kind of in reality in her house. And it's like, well, sorry, is he a dream villain or is he a real life villain? And it gets a little bit messy because it doesn't pick a side. It brings him into the real world.
I don't think that's true.
And then it's like, wait, no, he's back into the dream world.
I don't think that's true at all. I think it's mixing the surreal and the real in a really brilliant way. And as a kid, I understood it.
All right. That is a tough round to score. I'm scoring the round as we go.
Oh, God damn. That was a tough round.
That is a tough, tough round. Doing this is much harder than it sounds. I say that on every episode. I'm like, this is harder than it sounds. And people are like, well, it's just, you're just arguing about movies.
No.
So God bless anyone who's ever done this. So,
yeah, it is tough.
They all say the same thing about this point in the episode. They're like, man, this is tough. You sweat, you're drowning.
I know, I'm so high. I need a nap after this.
Yeah, why?
A warm beverage.
Adrenaline pumping, talking about movies. Okay, well, we are here to our final round already. This one is just a 60-second round. This goes back to uninterrupted. You get 60 seconds to make an uninterrupted final appeal to our audience. Speak directly to your juror. Speak directly to the panel who will be voting on this. Claire, we are going to start with you because, of course, Megan gets last word. So you get to just make a direct appeal, uninterrupted, why your film is the only film worthy of preservation for all time, even beyond the end times, on this episode. Why does your movie deserve to be last movie standing? Tell me when you're ready.
Yes.
Okay. And go.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, has a wonderful, great balance of humour and snark whilst also keeping its great scares and a really unsettling atmosphere that the franchise has now become infamous for. It has the most believable teams of the franchise, and it has the best ensemble cast of the franchise. You're constantly surprised throughout the film which one gets taken out, because it develops them all well enough that you never know which one will be left, and any combination of those teams in the mental health ward would work. I talked about it having the best kills and developing that CGI, and you can see the changes in the budget while still keeping that real kind of tacky DIY thing that the original had. It continues the absolute tradition of horror movie parents being just trash, which, you know, you've got to celebrate. We love a thing. And it's so rare for a horror sequel to actually be good, let alone better. That's why this one deserves to be the horror sequel that's saved.
Okay, a few seconds left on the clock.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I sped up that last point. I could have slowed down.
We'll stop there. All right, 60 seconds, uninterrupted.
Jesus Christ.
Make a direct appeal to our audience. Why should A Nightmare on Elm Street be preserved for all time, even beyond the end times in our vault?
Okay.
All right, and go.
Nightmare on Elm Street is an absolutely iconic horror film. It has paved the way for so many other horror films. It is brilliant. It is innovative. It is smart. Like I said, it has a little bit of satire in it. Robert Englund is an enigmatic, iconic villain. Wes Craven said he truly captured the Freddy that he wanted and that he just embraced menacing evil. And he does it really well while being fully enraptured by his own charisma and self. It has a lot of brutal kills. As I've said, the cinematography is great. The production design is great. It's dealing with a lot of trauma, PTSD, teens and their change in bodies and their fears. And it's dealing with all of that incredibly well. It deals with sleep, how you're never safe anywhere. Just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you are never safe when you're asleep. You're never safe where you think you are. And it also has one of the most amazing final girls, Carol J. Clover. Profile the final girl great, and Nancy encapsulates that, but she's also incredibly resourceful, determined, and survives by her wits, which is amazing.
Okay, wow. God damn. All right, I'm scoring this along as they go, audience, and I usually say this, but I don't know if it's ever been more true. You have a tough choice because this is tough stuff.
It's Freddy versus Freddy, so either way, the child murderer wins.
That is true.
He was a filthy child murderer. Can we just talk about the mom in the first Nightmare on Elm Street, even though it was my pick, has some of the weirdest line deliveries.
Yes.
And she
acting, weirdest dialogue. It's terrible.
Megan, you know that she was in Nashville, a Robert Altman movie. That's what she off of.
Yep.
And you're like, wait a minute, you went from Robert Altman and I think soap operas, but Robert Altman, and you're like, she's like, oh, I feel so much better, honey. I don't think I'll ever drink again. What the hell? What is this? Now that we've done Last Movie Standing, now that we've gone through all the different rounds, what are your closing thoughts about this process, this game we play called Last Movie Standing? What would you like to get across to maybe future competitors who think this is easy and they can just come in here and roll?
I found the hardest thing having the list that I had because I wanted the other list. And I'm sure if it had been, but I'm sure if I had got that list, I still would have wanted the other list. I think it's you want what you can't have. Because I was like, well, I'm going to pick Nightmare on Elm Street 3, but I was like, how do you compare Nightmare on Elm Street 3 to Hitchcock's classic Psycho? So thank God you did not pick Psycho. And yeah, I found it. I just kept looking at your picks and being like, well, do I go with which of my picks I think will be a better one to challenge your pick? Or do I don't go with the film that I want to defend the most?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I've got to be chewed in my vibes.
Yep.
Which is apparently child murder vibes.
Well, that's interesting, too, because I thought about that strategically, too. I was like, because I didn't know what was going to be picked. And so I was like, you know, I thought for sure you would pick Vertigo because that's such an iconic classic film. I mean, you know, Sight and Sound is named it the best film. It's on the top of many, many Hitchcock lists for the best film. So I thought for sure it was going to be that. And I was like, God damn, how do I pick it apart? And I did. And I also picked apart Psycho, which for me is not the best Hitchcock film. So that's what I went with. But at the end of the day, too, I was like, oh, Psycho is so iconic, too. Psycho, you know, influenced the slasher genre, came way before Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm like, how do I pick between those two? And then I ultimately went with my gut and I was like, you know what? I love A Nightmare on Elm Street. I think it is also wildly influential in a different way, some way in the same way. And yeah, so I went with what I love. And so what I actually think is a brilliant film, which I do, I think it is brilliant, but I also went with my heart and went with, this is a film I love and rewatch because it's great.
Yeah,
but this is not easy, and anyone thinking it's easy, it is hard because you have to anticipate what someone else is going to say. You have to deconstruct a film you may love or you may think is the best. You have to think about its flaws and really pick that apart and really prepare in a way you may be used to and a way you may not be.
No, I'm just still slightly mad that you chose Fantasia and Pinocchio instead of Snow White, which was clearly the best pick of those five films. So, you know, if I could have had Snow White on my list, this would have been a wildly different episode.
You know, I got to say this because we have botches and boners on the show. You're freestyling. You got notes. You got the movie nerd stuff that's in your head from just being a film obsessive. And then you're talking and the conversation's freewheeling when we do these episodes. I said it. I think it's Prince Valiant or whatever. It's not Prince Valiant. It's just in Snow White. It's just the prince. He doesn't have an adjective. He's just the prince. So I fucked up. That's a botch. That's a boner on my part.
Well, that fucked up. You fucked up. Not
you
that.
Fucked up. You fucked up. You fucked up.
Put it down in your binge movies notebooks, binge lords. I bonered it. I botched it. I fucked it up. I'm sorry because I know the Disney stands are going to come the fuck after me.
Well, wait,
sorry. Sorry, Megan. I don't know my princes. I don't know my princes.
Totally okay, but I was going to say, I find Snow White wildly creepy and problematic, too, because the prince is a creeper, so I'm glad Snow White wasn't picked.
It wouldn't be my top pick of all the Disney movies, but of the first five, it would be. I find Pinocchio very disturbing.
That's why I would pick it, because it's nightmare fuel.
No. I rewatched it, and I was like, okay, this isn't as horrible as I remember it being, and it's actually quite nice, and it's well made, but I was like, it's still weird as hell.
I know, that's why I like it, but everybody in that film is annoying, except for Geppetto. They're also terrible.
This is true.
Cleo and Figaro are like top heroes.
Oh, no, they're amazing, but there's not enough Cleo and Figaro. You're right.
That's the problem.
You know what? We spent a lot of time today burning bridges between each other. But today, we have built bridges because everybody knows that Figaro and Cleo are some of the cutest Disney characters ever created. The way that kitten tucks itself into bed is...
And then has to untuck himself to go and open the window. Yeah. It's like, you're a man, that would take you a minute, but no, make the kitten do it.
Yeah,
fine.
Exactly, yes. So we can all agree, Pinocchio is creepy. And
Nightmare
the cat
fuel.
and the goldfish are adorable. And Geppetto is just such a sweet man who deserves better than that terrible little boy.
Oh my god, Pinocchio's an asshole and Geppetto deserves way better.
Yeah.
So we all agree that little boys are shit then, right?
Yes!
Big Pinocchio, down with the little boys.
No.
Down with child murdering men, down with little boys. Down to the wall. I know, but I want more Disney showdowns because, like, I want Sleeping Beauty in the mix because Sleeping Beauty is so amazing.
Underrated.
Or the Disney Renaissance. It is so underrated. I know. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Or what about the Disney Renaissance? Anyway. Thanks for excited about future episodes.
Well, here's what I know. I know that I always enjoy talking to both of you. You're legitimately, all jokes aside, we've had a lot of fun here today. Mostly at my expense. That's all right. And I just enjoy both of you so much. I knew having the two of you on this episode would make it a very special episode. I had to end the year, our final last movie standing of 2021 special. And I couldn't think of two more special people to do that with than both of you. Claire, I never know what the fuck you're going to say. And, and I love it. And Megan, I feel like, I mean this in all due respect, I feel like you could be given 20 seconds of absolute bullshit and turn it into one of the most cutting arguments. Here's a bullshit topic. And then you're like, okay. And then just cut the fuck out of somebody.
Thank you.
So one of these days, we're going to have you on, Megan, to talk about genre films.
Ooh,
actually,
okay.
I've used you as a actual film critic, not knowing that you love slop. So I'll have you come on and talk about slop. And Claire, you're a film critic, but all we've ever talked about is slop. So I have to have you on for classic films.
Yeah, but then you give me classic films like Virgo. And I'm like, nah, mate, nah, I don't like it. Not good for me.
Don't give me that garbage.
Yeah. All right. Well, I truly, sincerely, get your plugs in. Where can we find you? What do you got going on? Because you're two of the best. So what do you got? Claire, let's start with you. You're the villain of the night. Maybe.
So you can follow me on Twitter. It's Claire Ellen Hope, Claire without an I, and you can find our podcast W Rated, where we watch the 100 worst films of all time as voted for by IMDb members, where my takes are actually much nicer because we really try and find the good and the bad, and sometimes, as I discovered with Rollerball, there is no good.
You're talking about the 99-2000 Rollerball, right? Not the Rollerball 2000 with James Caan, I think?
The one with Chris Klein from American Pie, they had to reshoot an entire... The pivotal action sequence, they had to go and reshoot it because they filmed it so poorly the first time. They then shot it worse the second time, so then put a night vision filter over the 10-minute scene.
Wow.
Yeah, look forward to that episode, which should be out now.
That's something special.
So we will have you on to talk about Fellini films probably, and Can we take a beat here, Megan, and just realize that Alfred Hitchcock has been eliminated from cinematic history?
I know. I knew that would be a sticking point for you. Yeah. He's a problematic dude, so whatever.
What we've just said is that
he was
the master of thrillers. Yeah, piece of shit guy.
He's a brilliant filmmaker, but...
Just wiped off the table. Yeah. Doesn't exist anymore. His entire fucking filmography is just, we just shit canned it all in 5 seconds.
If you ask me who my horror god is, Alfred Hitchcock or Wes Craven, anyone that doesn't say Wes Craven is wrong in my book.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that because, I mean, yeah, Alfred Hitchcock was cribbing so many other horror filmmakers. He wasn't actually innovating himself. He was a great thriller filmmaker, but not necessarily horror.
Wow. If I'm talking about the greatest horror director of all time, I'm personally picking Sean S. Cunningham because what talent does it take to go to a movie and then with a notepad and be like, how do I rip this off and turn it into a $1 billion franchise where half of the films are directed by porno directors? That is the Sean S. Cunningham way. What's that?
What is Sean S. Cunningham?
He's the father of the Friday the 13th series and several other very shitty films.
Yeah, that's no. No, thank you.
Okay, Megan, what about you? Where can we find you? What do you got going on here at the end of 2021?
All right. Well, you can find me every week as the co-host of Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. You can also find my written film reviews at Edge Media Network, a queer website where I write all kinds of reviews, but mostly focus on either women and non-binary directed films or genre films like horror and sci-fi. And you can find me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld. And for the end of the year, I will be cramming all of the awards films in order to vote in my film critics group, which is the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
Why no more women on Spoiler Piece Theater? Why aren't there more women?
I mean, Jason, as you learned at the start of this podcast, more women means emotional vampirism, so...
I didn't say that. I did not say that. I want the record to show that was not what I said. That was a gender neutral comment on my part. God damn, Claire. Again, problematic Claire.
Woo! The self-described. God's amazing. I'm here for it.
We've learned a lot here today.
We have. We've learned a lot. I feel like a much more enlightened person.
Yeah. Well, if you're just here because you like Megan, which I understand, or you're just here because you like Claire, which I understand, and all of a sudden you're feeling like you might want to stick around because this is like chaos, then you're going to love Binge Movies. Binge Movies is a movie podcast for movie maniacs who like deep dives, who like to talk about movies for hours, who like comparing and contrasting films. It's for everybody, right? If you're a hardcore movie person, if you like genre movies, good movies, bad movies, classic movies, absolute trash, we cover it all. So, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Binge Movies. You can follow us on letterboxd.com/bingemovies, bingemovies.podbean.com, and we've got exciting stuff coming out for 2022. Make sure you check the feed, check our Twitter account. We have some stuff we're going to be announcing here at the first of the year. I'm very excited about. The future is so bright, I have to wear shades. Let's just put it like that.
But are you wearing sunglasses at night?
Sunglasses at night, matchstick in my mouth. And I cut my pizza with scissors.
That makes me suddenly rethink everything I like about you.
Well, on that note, until next time, binge on! Watch you weave them, breathe your storylines. And I wear my sunglasses at night so I can keep track of the vision.